of the slides. Our meeting host will recognize each individual speaker by announcing the site from which they are providing comment. Speakers are requested to please state their name for the record and the topic they are addressing. The timer on the screen will indicate when a speaker's time has expired. Our meeting host will mute speakers if they continue to speak after the allocated time has expired. Board members are advised to listen to speakers and not engage in discussion. All school sites are welcome to remain on the line as silent observers following the public comment period. Belen, I think we have some speakers today.
Yes, and I believe there was some audio challenge. So just again, want to reiterate for our school sites, if there is anyone at your site who would like to give public comment, please use the raise hand feature and we will call you during the discussion. For now, we will go ahead and ask Alicia Sanchez to go ahead and provide your comment.
My English is not very good, but I'm going to try to better in Spanish for me. Okay, my name is Alicia Sánchez. Tengo representación de muchas partes, ¿verdad? Que estamos preocupados, ¿verdad? Por las escuelas KIPP, ¿verdad? Porque hay mucha tensión durante el tráfico. He tenido incidentes yo misma o mis familiares que hasta se han querido voltear, ¿verdad? Por el tráfico, ¿verdad? Esa es mi preocupación, porque hay mucha tensión en el alrededor de la escuela. Tengo ya más de 30 años ahí, mis hijos, mis sobrinos están yendo a sus escuelas, estoy preocupada por eso. Esa es mi preocupación, ¿verdad? Vengo en representación de ellos, ¿verdad? Gracias. Esa es mi mayor preocupación, ¿verdad? Gracias.
Tengo una pregunta. I do have one question. ¿A cuál escuela es? Which school is
it? Bueno, está en la... Ahí se me olvidó la calle.
Gracias. Ms. Sanchez was giving commentary saying that she has concerns about the traffic in the area. As we asked her, she is referring to Gascon, which is where Crip Poder is located. And she says that she's here on behalf of her community, that she has lived there for 30 years in the neighborhood with her family and others, and just has a lot of concerns about the traffic.
Señora Sánchez, voy a referir el caso al liderazgo de Kit para que se comunique con usted, okay? I just indicated that I'm referring this to the leadership so they can communicate with Ms. Sanchez, and she's provided her information. Muchas gracias.
And then next we have Erica Garcia.
I'll set the timer on this. I'm here with the same representing the Gascon community because we're here just to have the board reconsider the Proposition 39 because as you may or may not be aware, we are creating an environment of separate but unequal situations. I ask that you reevaluate this proposition because it is having negative effects all over the community, not only traffic, but just some students having certain things, other students not having other things. It's causing tension between students, staff, and parents. The lack of space, sharing, you know, parking lot, sharing gates, not being able to walk a certain hallway anymore, having to go around for certain things, having to students be able to explain to students that that's a separate school, students not understanding what that means, feeling like second class students sometimes. So even though Prop 39 is a law, it doesn't mean that it's an equitable law. It doesn't mean that it's the best, most moral, most fair, most considerate law for all students, because it just doesn't affect KIPP students, but it also affects public school students and staff and parents. So all in all, there is no win-win. There is no win that nobody benefits from co-locations. Is reevaluating that prop and figuring out a different way because kids are suffering, teachers and parents and the community are suffering because of this situation. So we're here just to reconsider, reevaluate, you know, just have a second look at this prop. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. And as I indicated previously, we're definitely going to refer this to our leadership team so they can address it. Thank you. Any other public comments, William?
At this time, I don't see any hands raised from our sites, from our school sites, so we can continue with our discussion.
All right. Thank you. Okay. All right, moving on to the consent agenda. Just as a reminder, we do not discuss items on the consent agenda. If there are any items on the consent agenda that require clarification, we can remove them and discuss them prior to voting. Asking all the board members, are there any items on the agenda that the board members would like to remove for further discussion? Okay. Not seeing any. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented?
Motion.
Randy motions. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so Julie seconds. All right, Delen?
Yes. Daniel?
Yes.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Bill?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
That's everyone.
Okay. All right. Moving on to the next item.
That's me. All right. I'm excited to kick off our updates. Since we've been in person, highlighting the amazing programs that we have in our schools is a highlight. So we're excited to bring two of our high-impact programs to you today. First, you're going to hear about our expanded learning program. I'm so excited for you all to hear the amazing things that are going on and the people that run them. And it's all the things that you always ask them for, sports and this. We're going to hear all of those things. And then hear from our school leader fellow program and leaders and a fellow to hear how we continue to grow and develop leaders at KIPP SoCal. So I'm going to hand it over to Kavika, who's going to introduce us to our first group, which is our expanded learning program.
I'm so excited for all of you to hear about this. Before I get into it, I want to introduce Jan, who's an amazing director on expanded learning. And Jan has, you know, she spent her entire career in after-school programming and expanded learning programs. We're very fortunate to have had her at KIPP SoCal for the last 8 years. She founded our program at KIPP Innovation. And after a couple of years there, for the last 6 years, she's been here with us at the SST, expanding our program dramatically. Which you'll hear all about across all of our schools. I'd be remiss not to mention she's also a former KIPP Star winner. So, you know, don't forget, more winners coming in a couple of weeks. That hopefully is like a testament to just the quality of the work that she has done over the last many, many years here. Since Lindsay's here, I also want to say a lot of this happened with Lindsay's help and support and leadership as well. So I know you've been a big part of making sure that our programs are high quality. So thank you. Jan, I'm going to turn over to you to introduce our amazing managers as well, please.
Thank you so much for introducing us. I'm really happy to be here today, presenting you the work that I really, really love and I'm passionate about for the past like 15 years of my life. And along two champions of this work. I'm really excited to be here to present everything we've done. And they're both reaching a huge milestone this year, 10 years at KIPP. And KIPP Academy opportunity. They'll have some like time to share some program highlights and then get us you're gonna get to learn about their programs today. So I'm really excited about it. So and then you'll get to ask them a bunch of questions at the end. So all right. And I'm going to have Jasmine take it off. So I wanted to give everybody an opportunity to think about what extracurricular activities you participated in as a child, or maybe you have kids of your own, and I want you to think about something that they really rave about, something that they love, and anyone can go. Any sports that come to mind that you participated in, or arts classes, ceramics, anything that maybe
journalism.
Circus.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. With a lot of those are the same type of enrichments we offer for
I have a coach for you.
Yeah. All the feedback we have received in the last couple of years, we know our families need these resources, and this is what we're here. We're going to inform you a little bit about what we do and how we operate those programs in ours. So, where we were. So, a long time ago, about 13 years ago, we had two programs, after-school programs, with an external provider, Kelly Prep and KAL, and we transitioned to operating in-house programs in about 2012 to really, really deliver quality programming. So fast forward to now, we operate 22 high-quality in-house programs that are free to all of our family members. So back in the past couple of years, in the 12 years, we have been really limited on the available spots in our programs. But now, through new legislation, California has aligned to something we really believe in, which is access to all of our students. So let me go to the next one. And then I would have Jacqueline.
Every tester will have full access to enriching, engaging, safe, and nurturing expanded learning opportunities year-round that add to their development as joyful, curious, whole students. When I read this quote out loud, I really think about how special expanded learning programs are and how far they've come. I was in after-school programs my whole life, and I can honestly, truly tell you that they didn't teach the whole me. They didn't even teach half of me, right? In our programs, we have students who have full access to a nutritious meal. They have enrichment opportunities, which is really the heart of what we do. They have homework support where they push themselves to turn in those missing assignments. And they have opportunity to learn about things that can become lifelong hobbies, passions, and even careers. We teach the whole child, and we do it all year round. We do it in the 10 months that we are in school. We do it during summer. We do it in spring and winter breaks. And families really not only need after-school programs now, they truly appreciate them. So what is extended learning? So we're going to have Jacqueline walk us through a little bit about that, how the day looked at her school. Yeah, so like I mentioned, we do offer three major components. So students have access to a nutritious meal every single day throughout the entirety of the program. We offer homework blocks where we have intervention and tutoring opportunities where students really show that ganas, that effort to turn in those assignments, to learn something or pick something up that they might have missed during the regular school day. We have enrichment programs that is really what keeps students engaged, keeps them learning, keeps them it exposes them to things that they might have never heard or even seen before.
And with in addition to our after-school programs, we've now added summer programming, which is 9-hour program on non-school days. So we're going to be doing that during the summer and during our intersession breaks, which is winter break, Thanksgiving break, all those types of breaks, so we can stay open most of the year for our families. Yes. And what's special about us, we're in-house programming. We don't outsource the program. We run our own. And that really helps us build a relationships, helps us align to the school culture and values of the school. And I'm going to have Glenn share a little bit about that at his school.
Yeah, a major part of our program, why it's successful too, is because we're all together. I'm part of our school admin team at the school. So like I said, from the top of the day to the end of the day, everything flows smoothly. We bounce ideas off each other. We have meetings just to adjust to see how kids can be more successful. Like I said, when it comes to homework and all that stuff too, meeting with our teacher, meeting with our after school staff or instructors, everything's aligned. That's why our program is really, really successful as well.
Yeah. And it helps build relations across the whole. So a student knows that the school leader and the expanded learning program is really aligned on what they're offering. And then we serve all of our students, even our TKers are in the program. Some of the ones you saw in that picture are TK students. So, in the last couple of years, we've grown to be the largest charter organization to run in-house programming. And so that's really also an LA point. So,
I have a quick question about the summer program. A couple of questions, actually. which is amazing for parents or anybody who has young children, right? They can go and work and not have to worry about their child. So the first question, how are parents informed that this is available for them? And is there any cost involved for the parent?
Great. We're about to launch our interest period. So we're seeing a pre-announcement to all the schools that this program is available.
Great. Thank you. Great.
And move us to our part, right? The part of our programs. So in the past few months, and here in the last part, I want to share that they made their own, they consulted and like fundraise for a charity at this scholar. That was what they called the KIPP holiday market, and students were sharing. It was awesome. I really enjoyed that one. But you can see here, these are some of the enrichments. Just, I couldn't add more pictures, but we can have a try. These are the types of things we offer to our students on a daily. Every school is offers different things. We see drumline, that's at San Diego. This is my niece, by the way, and so on. These are the types of things we do at our programs. We really, really want to expose students to different opportunities that they wouldn't be able to have elsewhere. I know you really want to know how we do it. So our instructors, our part-time instructors that we hire at our school, we have about 22 managers that hire part-time instructors. We really try to hire people that are passionate about what they can teach, and then they come in and teach those things to our students. And we also partner with community organizations to come and help us. So right now we just partner with After School Music Academy, and they're doing ukulele, they're doing martial arts, they're doing piano, things that we can't offer ourselves. And I'm gonna transfer this over to our field trips, which is Mr. Ivana.
So, in the past few months, we've been able to take hundreds of educational field trips. We've been able to take our students to different theme parks, and of course, educational base, hiking, whale watching. And when they're there at these field trips, especially at the big theme parks that they get to visit, they actually go in and they actually learn how the parks actually work. So they go into sessions and they learn about the wheels and the mechanics and everything turns and moves and all that stuff. So it's really, really exciting for them. And then after that, they also get to go into the park and actually enjoy the park as well. So like I said, this has been truly amazing to actually take these kids on these field trips. And then, you know, it might spark into something big for them. They might want to work at one of these theme parks. But like I said, it's truly amazing. You see the things the kids are learning from going on these field trips as well.
So, for example, at Disneyland, we went to an engineering workshop. So the kids got to walk around the park and learn, like, the history of engineering. And they got to build their own water of color, if you're a big Disney fan here. They got to build up the water. amazing to see the kids learn and really build things up. So, and then Gladion, I'm sure, really awesome quote of one of his students in this past summer, because this is the first time we offered that many field trips. So, it's really cheesy.
Yeah, so this past summer, we had 2 weeks to take our kids, like I said, on these great adventures. And on one of the field trips, when I was there, a student came up to me and they were like, Mr. Gladden, said, hey, how's it going? What's going on? You enjoying yourself? He said, I'm having a great time. And you know, I want to thank you. Like, I really want to thank you for bringing me here to this field trip. I'm like, why? Because he said, without you, you know, I would have never had this chance to actually come here. And like I said, it really touched me when I heard that. Seriously, guys, like, it was amazing. And like I said, this is why we do what we do, because of the kids, you know. So it was an amazing experience.
Jen, can I just have one thing that is, you know, given the couple of years when we literally could do zero field trips for COVID safety reasons, you know, the team has worked really hard to even, it's always been a component, but we've been increasing it dramatically to make up the fact that our kids got a lot less exposure during that time. So they've been doing the hard work to make that happen.
Yeah, and then this spring break, we have about 7 schools going out to San Diego to the Safari Park to, you know, to do educational workshops there. So it's really awesome. And then the next slide is sports, which I'm going to have Mr. Glenn talk about too.
So now sports has become such a big part of our schools. So like when I first started here 10 years ago, when I came, you know, when I joined KIPP SoCal, there were literally, what, 2 sports programs. We had basketball and football. And I'm happy to say today we have so much more. We have soccer, we have futsal, we have girls volleyball. And for the first time this year, we actually had girls flag football, which was amazing too as well. The goal is to actually run our own in-house sports league. That would be amazing for us. Like I said, we have so many schools, and it would be actually great to have us actually come together and, you know, compete amongst ourselves. The only thing is, like I said, when it comes to facilities, that's our biggest issue. I know you guys are amazing. And fine. finding these great school sites. It would be amazing if we actually could find a site where we could actually build a facility with a gym, a track, you know, everything, and where we can use year-round for our students as well. And if that doesn't work, just partnering up with local community partners, if they just have space that we could actually use a couple times a week, that would be amazing as well. But like I said, guys, sports is like the it's a driving thing for our families. They love it. Our students love it. You know what I mean? Think about when you were back in school and how it felt to go, like, after you did your studies, you go and cheer your team on. It's just an amazing experience for our kids that we're trying to create.
Can I ask a question about?
Yeah.
So with sports facilities, is there, do you think it's practical to have multiple schools using the same facility if we were able to come up with that? Or does each school, in other words, would the kids and parents travel to get to it? Or is it, or does it have to be distributed as opposed to centralized?
I think it would be best if we had two. So we have South LA and we have East LA. So if we had a facility in each location, I think that should be able to serve the schools. You know, like I said, having one would be great too. We could probably make it work, but ideally, I would love to see one in each location, you know, for all the schools.
Yeah. One thing that works now is that we bus our students to wherever their games are at, and they're able to go in the bus and come back to the second bus as well. So that can help us. So, yeah.
One last thing also, too, it also will save funding for us as well, because a lot of these sports programs, we're actually paying for them to actually go and participate in these other leagues. So, like I said, if we had our own facilities, that would actually cut back on costs as well.
Well, on buyouts, sorry, the machine up there in front.
Oh, wait, sorry. Oh, I have another clicker. I was like,
and so that program highlight, I have a lot of pictures, so it was really hard to fit in everything. But because we don't have a facility to do like in continuous leagues every week, we do one day tournaments. This is something I'm very proud of that has been going on for the last couple of years. We just, as this picture right here is our last soccer tournament. It was 23 students, even the little ones participated all the way to eighth grade. We had different leagues, they played against each other, they got huge trophies. They were taller than me. And then we have cheer and dance competition, which we have coming up actually in May, and a basketball tournament as well. We had a cheer and dance clinic last weekend. And the most like thing I want to highlight that was really exciting this summer is that we went to Medieval Times and filled an arena with 600 plus kipsters across the region. And they tailored the show to be educational. So they learned, they engaged the students. It was awesome. So that's the type of things I want to continue to do for the region. So, if you ever want to come up, just go get to this. And,
chaperones, yeah. If you guys want to be chaperones, got it.
Okay. On it. And what's really like awesome about these family events is that we hire our own family members and community members to come out and like sell or like partner or like one of the photographers or parent at one of the schools, right? So we really want to reach our families to be part of those families, to be really like a family feel. And so now let's move to a little bit more information. So the current status, as you can see here, we have over 2,000 students enrolled right now. We do have about 1,000, you know, that's a ballpark number. We've noticed our families have been dropping from the wait list because they can look for other resources because it's an impact, but we are having a lot of hiring challenges right now. So that's just, it's affecting our families a little negatively because we cannot hire and fill out the spots for our programming. And we also know that having access to our parents is really, really important because our families need it, not only because they're working parents, as I am, like it's an important part of what KipSoCal is.
And just to be clear, we have the space, we have the funds, we just hiring people is our biggest barrier, which is a common trend.
How many people could we accommodate if we didn't have a higher age?
All of our kids.
With the new legislation has allowed us to give access to every single kid here in the region. So basically anyone that would want it wouldn't be in a part of the program. We just don't have the team members to serve.
Yeah. For hiring, do we look to the KIPP Alumni Network?
Oh, yeah.
And has that been a...
Depends. Sometimes we get a student, sometimes we don't.
Yeah. I actually have two LA Prep instructors who are alumni for LA Prep, and they're now.
But you think during the summer that would be obvious?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to continue to do that and partner with our KIPP over to for that. Any other questions?
I had a question, actually. So with the current staff, is it mostly existing teachers, or are there, or from outside, or are we hiring mostly from outside?
We hire mostly from outside, and at a lot of our schools, we also hire our teachers, like at KO, to help us stay after school to run our enrichment club. So a lot of our schools do pull from teachers as well.
Yeah, how many instructors do you have?
Right now, currently we have 155 instructors. We're still, this year alone, we have about 60 vacancies left over. We're about to launch our interest period next month, so we'll see where the need is. It might be like about 300 instructors that we'll need. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's the feedback you're getting on the hiring challenge? Like, what's creating the challenge?
That everyone in the state of California is having this problem. So it's a lot of they want more pay. It's also a part-time job, so it's hard to accommodate schedules. A lot of our team members are college students. Mm-hmm. So how to bridging that that gap too, like accommodating schedules. There's some different ones. I don't know if you have any other that you want to add.
Yeah, I feel like scheduling and being part-time is a big thing for them. Economy is rough, and people are really looking for that full-time job, that those benefits, that, you know, all of the perks and whatnot. And so I think that's a big one.
And we're working right now to see how increase the pay, maybe make us more competitive to be able to bring more people into the degree. So. Any other questions?
Is there any consideration to provide a college credit, you know, for early childhood education, you know, students in college that could possibly be part of that?
We're going to hang up. We're working with ELAC to see if we can do something like that, like SLA College. So we can consider that. That's awesome. That's a good idea. Yeah. Anything else?
The last one is, what that is, right? We know that expanded learning programs are a really big part of KIPSOCA is, and we want to continue to offer year-round programming. And we know that 100% of our schools are going to have programs. We're going from two schools to every single school offering program next year. It's going to be really exciting. And then we want to continue to hire team members, but not just hire, really develop them so we can offer quality programming for our team members. And we want to continue to partner with outside organizations, which is where you come in. If you have anyone that you know that you want to connect me with, I would love
to graduate.
I would really love to hear more about that, because I want to continue to bring more opportunities to our students and expand their horizons. We take them outside their building and really learn. I really want to thank you for your time. We're going to have a couple program highlights, and then we'll open up.
I think one of the things that really stands out at my site at Convienza is I focus on creating strong teams. So I hire, develop, and retain people who genuinely, wholeheartedly love what they do. They lead with love, and they focus on making connections. The second is opportunity. Students have opportunity to join our student council. They have a say in our monthly menus, what they're eating, in our events and our schedules. Even alumni, I have students from our founding year who come back and help us with homework support, reading, even just to carry things from point A to point B for teachers. And then obviously our staff members, there's always developmental opportunity for them to grow into their role, go into an assistant role. And then the last is partnerships. So Comienza is a K-8 school. So the lower school campus manager and myself, who is at upper, we work together to make sure that the transition from elementary school to middle school is as smooth as possible for both students and families.
For me, I would say first the stakeholders, our school site staff, the admin, I think we do an amazing job working together. And like I said, that's why our program is really successful. The second thing is, I would say our sports program, we have a very competitive and successful sports program there at KO. We try to.
How many championships? Let us know how many championships. Come on.
We won quite a bit. Like I said, that's the amazing thing about us. Like I said, we're very competitive. We enjoy doing that. And then the last thing I would say is our students. Our students are the heartbeat of our school and our program. Without them, we wouldn't have it. So those are the things that actually make my program run and make it great and what it is. So,
any questions?
No, for now we have a contact with the Dodgers.
Manny.
So somebody should be calling Manny.
Yeah, that's not it. I'll get on. I wrote down stadium for kids.
Any other questions anyone wants to ask?
Great.
This is great. Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead.
And before we end, if you ever want to come, if you have time, come on and visit our programs or come to our upcoming regional events. I would love to see you there.
Make sure you're in May.
Yes, we have a couple coming up.
Make sure you guys are on your list. Well, let's give a round of applause. Thank you, theaters and models for like what we want for our kids and that whole child experience that is KIPP. Thank you so much. You guys are amazing. So take all the facts you want. And they're going to go back to run their programs right now. Yeah. Even more amazing. So.
And for the board members, this is early on we talked about being more visible other than attending these meetings. And I think this is as soon as you get us that information, opportunities for us to show up and check things out. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Another round of five. Okay. School leadership fellow program. I mean, that's a hard, tough one to follow. Sorry, Rodriguez and James. I mean, you know, we love our leaders.
Sure. It's all the people.
We should wrap baby pictures of all of our leaders. No, just kidding. Next time. So I'd like to introduce here's Adriana Rodriguez and James Marin and Melissa Torres, who are going to talk to us about our school leadership fellow program. They'll tell you more about themselves as we go through the presentation, but you know, KIPP SoCal is always on the cutting edge of things, and we are one of the first regions to create an in-house school leader fellowship program. And so they're here to talk more about what that looks like, sounds like, feels like. So go ahead and take away, Rodriguez.
Hi, everyone. Super excited to be here and share a little bit about our school leadership fellow program. So in our short time today, we're going to spend a little bit of time introducing ourselves and what we do for KIPP SoCal. Then we're going to give you a little brief intro into what the fellowship program is. And then we have the amazing Melissa Torres here, one of our current school leaders and former school leader fellow that's going to share about her experience with the program and how that has impacted her leadership. And we're going to end with some questions.
Yes, good afternoon, KIPP SoCal Board. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I want to introduce ourselves. My name is James Marin. I'm one of the Director of Leadership Development. And prior to, I've been here since November of 2021. Prior to coming to KIPP, I served as Director of Student Services in the school district. And I also was coming from the high school world, principal at Locke High School and Jordan High School in South LA. And then I did my teaching in South LA with LAUSD at Edison Middle School, Fremont High School, and then at LA Jordan. And it's been wonderful being part of the KIPP SoCal team this year.
And hi again. I've been with SoCal since 2009. I joined as a founding first grade teacher at KIPP Laices Academy with Amber. I was there for 5 years before doing the Fisher Fellowship. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then I'm opening up our 13th school, KIPP Promesa Prep in Boyle Heights, where I was a proud school leader there for almost 7 years before transitioning into this role. Something that I omitted from there is upon taking this role, there was a need at one of our schools. So I acted as the interim school leader at KIPP Academy of Innovation, one of our middle schools. And it was a beautiful experience where I got to do it alongside one of our fellows who came to us from KIPP Texas, having completed their fellowship program. And we worked alongside to make that transition as smooth and seamless as possible for our students in our community. And he was able to successfully complete the program at the end of last year, so December 2022. And I was able to fully transition back into this role of Director of Leadership Development.
So our work is surrounded around three big buckets. The first big bucket of work is around our selection process, which is now like almost a year-long process of recruiting new talent, cultivating new leaders, both internal in our organization and external, and running our selection events, which we're currently in that season right now of interviewing and going through folks for the fellowship. Our second big bucket of work is, once they're in the fellowship, is actually development. So developing our school leader fellows on the ground with their mentor school leaders. And so that's a year-round process. And then our third one is developing the pipeline, the leadership pipeline, which is our dean and ASL development. We want to make sure that they're getting the development so that they're coming up the pipeline to become future school leader fellows and then hopefully school leaders one day.
All right, so a little bit of an intro to our school leader fellow program. Our fellowship program replaced what was usually done or traditionally done by the Pitt Foundation. So if you remember, if you've been around for a little bit, you know that the foundation led cohorts like the Miles Fellowship, the Fisher Fellowship, KSLP, all that good stuff. And KIPP SoCal was the first region to start with their own fellowship program. We do have KIPP Foundation support through the Principal Pipelines team. So James and I get to go through trainings with them, both in person and online, to learn from other regions, learn with other regions, and make sure that we are enhancing and improving our program. Yeah, we're the first region, right? We're the first region, yeah. We're the first region.
Always the first.
And it was the KIPP Foundation in every other region calls it the Principal's in Residence Program. We call it SLFP, so School Leader Fellow Program. And our program is designed to be a one-year program in which we develop our emerging school leaders and focusing on leadership skills and competencies, such as instructional leadership, leading through an anti-racist and equity framework, cultural competence and relationship building, adaptive, servant, and responsive leadership, and practicing mindfulness and wellness. We usually get with our fellows a couple of times a year, and then we have Angela and Hidiga and Amber and a lot of other leaders across our organization leading sessions with them, right? Doing case studies, engaging in cognitive coaching, adaptive leadership, things that we know all of our school leaders need in order to prepare to be successful school leaders.
So once a school leader fellow is selected, they're assigned to a school site and they sit under the title of an assistant school leader. And while they are in that tenure as assistant school leader, they have a mentor school leader that works with them on the ground on specific skills and competencies to prepare them for that school leader seat. Ourselves as a director of leadership development work with the mentor school leader and the fellow continuously to make sure that they become proficient in these skills. Another big area is that along the way, there's quarterly progress checkpoints that are grounded in our leading for learning skills and our leadership competency framework model. And so we really want to make sure that there's evidence that we are collecting and seeing that's grounded in these core competencies and skills to signal that they are making progress closer to culmination and get ready for the school leader seat. In addition, they are, at the end of the fellowship, they complete a capstone presentation project to the senior leadership team on the overall experiences and learning set reflection that they've had in the program and some of the competencies that they have become proficient in along the way. And for the coming school year, we are transitioning into a project-based assessment model. We are going to pilot this year. And the reason for that is thinking about more of an integrated approach to leadership instead of seeing isolated skills along the way, but just really, helping leaders see how all these skills come together in various facets of leadership through different projects that they lead and initiatives that they lead school-wide. So we're going to be rolling that out this year with the fellowship.
And to share about her experience in the fellowship, we have Melissa Torres, who is currently the school leader at KPU, Pueblo Lower School. She has a very special place in my heart because she was a founding teacher at PROMESA. She started with PROMESA a long time ago, 2016, as a founding second grade teacher, and then was a dean there for a couple of years before starting the fellowship, being placed elsewhere, and then ultimately being the school leader at Pueblo. So she's going to share a little bit about her experience. Melissa, come on over.
This is Melissa's second board meeting this year. She's famous.
Good afternoon, everyone. As mentioned, my name is Melissa Torres. Just a little bit of background information about me. I started with KIPP in 2016 as a founding second grade teacher at KIPP PROMESA under Adriana's leadership. I was then a founding third grade teacher. Adriana somehow convinced me to found 2 years in a row. Then I transitioned into dean for 2 years. I then applied for the school leader fellow program. And then now I am a founding school leader at KIPP Pueblo Lower School. What had attracted me to the program was just the on-the-ground experience. Like, I'm a firm believer you learn by doing, and I think that had the most impact on my professional development. Also, thinking about the timeline given just to focus and zoom in on my development, I feel like it's rare to find programs that are, we're just going to focus on you, your development, before we transition you into taking over such a big role. And I do believe the time given and dedication to my development really supported me to feel successful in what I'm doing now. Targeted professional development that I've mentioned before, the cognitive coaching, the case studies, all of that had a positive impact on my learning. And then just the intentional goal setting and development plans that were given to me, those checkpoints just to progress monitor to ensure that I was actually ready to fully take over a school on my own. My placement was at Comienza Lower School with Crystal Vega, Washington. As difficult as it was to have to disconnect myself from Promesa because I had built such strong relationships, I firmly believe that it was a positive impact on my learning, seeing a different school, seeing different types of adaptive skills that are used, different types of planning. And I feel like this truly allowed me to replicate the successes that I saw across both campuses and also make it my own as I took over the school that I'm at now. School leader fellow cohort. I really enjoyed being part of a cohort of leaders. It allowed me to build lifelines and still have shoulders to lean on as we're taking over schools together. So I really appreciate doing the work alongside other leaders as well. A little bit about me.
And Melissa's doing great. I get to the pleasure of managing her right at this moment. And she just is like, I'm like, what year school leader are you? 3, 4? She's like, one. I was like, almost a full year, but she's just an incredible leader for us.
Melissa, so while you're in the program, you know, you have your full job as assistant dean. How much time a week or a month or however you look at it is the participation in the program?
I feel like every day is a full participation in the program because just being on site, like with my mentor school leader, the intentional including me and all the decisions that she's making, while also simultaneously supporting the school, I feel like my development was like a priority in everything that was planned on the day-to-day.
They have intercessions, I think, five times a year where they're away from the school for two full days where they engage in PD. That's where I lead a session and other leaders in the organization, Amber and Kavika, lead sessions. And then the mentor school leaders who are assigned, they also get programming to make sure that they are working the plays, working the workbooks. So they are pulled off site to get training to make sure that they're doing the right support. So that's why it's like, no, you're going to bring your fellow into this maybe crucial conversation or listen to how I'm going to resolve the situation with the family or watch me coach a meeting. That's part of the mentor school leader's responsibility in investing and developing in their fellow that's placed at their school.
Just consistent meetings with whoever my school leader fellow mentor was, and then my DLD as well.
All right, Agent Melissa. And these are some of the most recent pictures we've taken with some other fellows. So Amanda Cavero, who is the current interim school leader at Comienza Upward. This was her checkpoint 6, like graduation culmination presentation. So here we are celebrating her big achievement with balloons. And then here we have Jessica Clepesa from Camp Vida with Amanda Tran, who's school leader. And again, this is her culminating presentation where she graduated from the program and she remains at Camp Vida under Amanda's leadership.
Only one bullet.
I'm sorry. Well, we have more. We have more.
People on our show have phobias of balloons. So we have to put them away quickly, the balloons. Phobias of balloons. Right. So we have to put them away quickly. But it's fun. They come into the room. It's Amber. We come into the room and we throw balloons, and it's a great celebration.
Yeah. Any questions for us?
Yeah. So, how many years have you been doing this now? And is the expectation you haven't gotten to the point where like somebody's gone through the program, you're like, that's not going to be a school leader? Has that happened? And you know, how would you deal with it while you know not dashing their hopes of being a school leader? Right? So they just
We've only been in the role as DLDs, as Directors of Leadership Development, for a year. The program has existed for a while. It just used to be run by a couple of people from our regional team. And we have about 18 fellows that have graduated from our KIF SoCal program. We have checkpoints throughout the year or 2 years that they engage in the program. But like Melissa said, right, like they meet with us right now, right? We progress monitor and we make sure that they are on track to complete the program at a designated time. And if there is a fellow that is struggling or is falling behind, we do create modified plans for them to engage in the work in a more targeted way.
So of the 18 who have gone through, what's been like, how many are actually school leaders or how many are still?
Good question. A lot. Kintra needs that have transitioned out of a KIF SoCal or the school leader seat, but a lot of them are being school
leaders. Or leadership roles in the organization.
Yeah, is there a commitment once they graduate that they stay with KIF at least, you know, 12 months or, you know, we're building that talent pipeline, you know, why is it, right? So is there a potential to do that, a commitment on being part of this program?
I'm not sure what we can and cannot do in regards to, I mean, I think we do invest a lot of time, a lot of energy in their development and very targeted development that accessibly.
We don't have employment contracts for any of our employees. So everybody's, you know, even if we did, California's an at-will state, so we wouldn't be able to. So.
But I think the investment, right. I think why people stay around is because right. They're like, wow, the time, the energy, the relationships.
Right.
Gets people to like cement them into the organization for beyond just the fellowship. In fact, other CMOs ask me all the time, can they send their leaders to join our fellowship? And I was like, sure, there will be leaders at KIF SoCal. But, you know, because people are craving this kind of leadership development as a model for others.
Yeah. What do teachers and others learn about this opportunity?
Yeah, we're doing that now. So as we build out our leadership structure, so right now we're developing cohorts for next school year, for teacher leader cohorts, our dean leader cohorts, our assistant school leader cohorts, so that they're all aware of what the leadership pipeline of development looks like and an expectation that if you have an aspiration to be a school leader one day, this is the journey, this is the pathway. And so we want to encourage that as early as teacher leader stage. So like let's map this out with the school leader.
And our talent team also helped like promote this program. Like they posted it, they've been advertising. We held about two office hours, I believe, before the application opened up just to like gauge interest, but also inform leaders that may or may not be ready yet of a potential and a program for their development.
And then part of this, we are trying to get better at communicating your career trajectory at KIF SoCal. So when someone joins KIF as a person that works for the after school program or the extended learning program knows all of the different ways I can grow my career. I can go into the teacher residency program. I could then after that, I could go into leadership if I wanted to, or I could be a mentor teacher to other leaders. I could be so that, you know, given the talent crisis, we're working on how do we truly be transparent and expand our program so people really can envision a pathway in multiple ways through here, including the School Leader Fellow Program.
Are there any awards or recognition given to the mentors, like, or singling out people that are doing it multiple times, giving them special recognition, that kind of thing?
It's something new that we started this year. We got approval to one, like give them a stipend. Before we had mentor school leaders just doing it to develop people because of their love of developing leaders. And now there's like a monetary compensation to it. So there is that. At the school leader retreat, the KIF Foundation had like a happy hour for them to, you know, engage with each other and other mentor school leaders across the nation. For us, mentor school leaders, because I was in the school leader seat for a little bit, mentor school leader planning and like long-term planning for that did take a back seat, but this upcoming school year we're really working on building that really strong cohort between the MSL mentor school leader community, and also like celebrating them and their achievements and their investment in leaders, not just for their schools but for our organization.
That swag seems to be very.
She got really good swag. Michelle's wearing one of the swags.
But like a special one for 3 years of doing it or whatever, like those kinds of things. Like,
swag is my jam, so that rather makes that rather. Sorry. She has like paint, like a sword
theme.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Still a go through walls.
That's great. Yes. Any other questions? Thank you all so much for.
Thank you. No, there's no more Fisher Fellowship anymore.
What's the background of that?
So, okay, a lot of different things. So, when the effectiveness of the Fisher Fellowship program and having the KIPP Foundation run it was like under review, and as regions began to grow rapidly, the need for like localized development was expressed, right? That so when you're a Fisher Fellowship and the old design, like what Amber and what Adriana did was they traveled the country, they explored lots of schools, and the context as things evolve, especially like the context of California and Southern California is unique. And so we need people to spend more time here in Los Angeles on the ground, student recruiting, teacher recruiting, like just the environment was changing around us. So it required a change in the program. So then the concept was like, well, why don't we help our regions grow their own in-house leadership development program so they can meet the specific needs of the program? So I think it was a good adjustment. I do think we've given the KIPP Foundation this feedback of having their involvement in quality control and participation and those sorts of things is important. But we do appreciate the ability to have leaders like James and Adriana to lead this, and our people are local.
Do they support it financially?
They do give us some resources to help fund a position. And then they do give us resources to professional development and program design. But we do take the burden, most of the cost.
Is this a potential flat point, you know, from the last meeting?
One KIPP. We'll see. They are going to explore what new leadership development could look like from a foundation perspective. It's really in the early stages around what shifts they're looking to make around that. So to be determined.
One thing to share too as part of our selection process is team members from other KIPP regions join so that there's other perspectives, other voices that help us with the decisions.
Yeah, so our selection process is rigorous. I mean, it is a event. Let's just say it's an event, multiple days, multiple hours, deliberations. Last time went to 8 o'clock at night? I don't know. Late evenings. And, you know, we have really great discussions around the selection and we try to hold a high bar. We'll be pushing our bar higher as we always do at KIPP SoCal, but we're really proud of the work that we've done. And it yields great leaders like the ones you met. That's all.
Great. Okay. Moving on to another exciting item.
Renewals. Without us renewing our schools, like we wouldn't be around. But I think that like our after school program and our school leader development program are all great reasons why the renewal of our schools are so important and what we bring. I wanted to make sure I provide an update for you as we go along. We're heading into the first renewal season post pandemic. And so I want to make sure that our board is highly invested. I know that as we begin the authorization process, the renewal process formally this summer, there will be a lot of questions about how engaged our board is in the renewal process. So I want to make sure I can answer, yes, our board is well aware of our renewals and the status and all it takes to get renewed. So some of this is review and some of this is just a heads up of what's going well and some of the challenges that we're facing. So as a reminder, we have 4 schools up for renewal that will go through this summer, Scholar Soul Corazon Philosophers, all authorized by LUSD. The criteria for renewal is around AB 1505. That renewal was suspended for 2 years, pause, what they call renewal relief. So technically these schools should have been renewed in 2021, but because it was delayed 2 years, here we are going into renewal this summer. So the CDE, I'm going to go over the criteria. The CDE released an addendum in October to clarify how authorizers should approach renewal post-pandemic. But it's a little bit unclear around how our authorizer is going to read that language, but we have two really big challenges ahead of us. So challenge number one is that LAUSD has not yet released their interpretation of this guidance. They have told us that maybe in May, May the earliest that we'll receive this, knowing that we will submit our renewals in July. So it doesn't give us a lot of time to really make sure that we're following their directions. And then the second challenge is that LAUSD school board support to renew our schools is the wild card. The composition has changed. We know that we have some of the board members running for other offices right now, et cetera. So it's just a very dynamic situation at the school board. So just so that we understand the AB 1505 language in this addendum, the standard for renewal that's typical says that two consecutive years of dashboard data is needed to renew immediately preceding the renewal decision. So this means that the dashboard data for the last 2 years would be part of the renewal. However, because there was a pandemic, there was no dashboards in 2020 or 2021. So we do not have two consecutive years of dashboard data. So the CDE released this language down here at the bottom that now authorizers for the renewal criteria in this first year post-pandemic, where the AB 1505 will be the standard for renewal, is now two different, now it's a different criteria. So if you look at the bottom, the district is required to one, close the school or not renew if the charter school has failed to make sufficient progress toward meeting standards, and the closure of the school is in the best interest of the pupils. So the authorizer has to use this. We don't know how the authorizer is going to interpret this language. So that's what we are waiting for. We don't know how they're going to define sufficient progress. We don't know what they're using to that closure is in the best interest of pupils. So we are eager to understand exactly what they mean by that. And so this is part of the challenge that we're in right now in this kind of year of unknowns. Now, we at KIPP SoCal like to make sure we have our plans and contingency. And so this is a very strict timeline of how things will go this year as we prepare for renewal. So in June, when we meet for our board meeting, you all will be asked to approve to submit the renewals. We will submit in July. This means that a public hearing will happen at LAUSD where anyone can speak, not a vote will happen. That will happen in September. In October, the LAUSD board will be required to vote whether they will approve or deny the renewal of our charters of our four schools. Depending on that outcome, and here's where contingency comes into play, if they decide to not renew any of our schools, we will immediately or, you know, within a couple of weeks, appeal to the LA County Office of Education. We will go through a process there. Everything is very time bound and strict according to law. They have to follow those timelines. A decision will be made by LACO in February. If they choose not to approve, then we would appeal to the State Board of Education. This takes us all the way to May. Our charters expire June 30th of 2024. Oh, yeah, that's, I'm messing up those dates there. You know, halfway trying to get through this poll. So this is a very tight timeline. I'm better now, Randy. I'm good. So it's just my voice didn't come back yet. So this is our process and the things that we'll need to do to make sure that we're ready. I'll pause here for any questions or maybe, and Curtis isn't here and maybe, and Lindsay's probably stepped out too. Yeah. To answer any questions about the appeal process. Yes, that's Lisa. She's a lawyer.
What is the makeup of the
So LACO is a, a friendlier board, I would say, towards charters. There is one person that is like adamant, like no more charter schools. Everyone else is fairly reasonable. And definitely some friendlies. Yvonne Chan, who's on the board, she founded like the first charter school in California. Deb Duardo, who is the LACO superintendent, is a really, you know, Lindsay's heading to one of her conferences. We've invited her to be a part of our panelists and all of the things. She's really engaging superintendent. And so we have positive momentum and positive relationships to build. So we're working on that actively right now to making sure that if we have to go that route, we have those relationships intact. The Board of Supervisors appoints the LACO board members, right? They're not elected. And so they will be some changes coming next year. And so we're making sure that we also try to work with the Board of Supervisors office to, you know, suggest what great people would be as LA County board members.
There, and if just to follow up there, if LACO overturns LAUSD, yep. Can LAUSD appeal it to the Board of Education?
That's a really great question, but no. No. And we will then be now authorized by right. LA County.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They will be our authorizer. Like CODED.
Mm-hmm. Is it an all or none? Like, could they authorize? Like, I can't remember which schools are.
So it's four schools. So, I mean, yeah, each school has its own LEA. So they will vote and treat each one independently.
So are there any that are struggling academically or whatnot that they can? I mean, it's not, as we know, it's not a super charter friendly.
No, it's not. No, the record of voting is not in favor of charters. So I feel confident saying that. So we have, you know, Kip Philosophers was here to present their improvement plan. And so that's a school that we are actively working. It is, you know, based upon their 2022 SSAC results, you know, they were our school that struggled the most. And so, you know, we're working really hard and I'll go over our strategy to make improvements. I think across the board, we'll see progress. The rate of that progress looks different, will look different across our schools. But the problem is like how LAUSD will define that progress is our challenge. And all the other amazing things we do at our schools. Like, we're so much more than academics. Like, look at our amazing programs that we're running and how do we make, making sure that it's very well known that closing down a school like Philosophers in Watts would be, you know, immoral or unethical. And it's devastating to the community. So that's part of our strategy.
We've got to go to the best interests of the pupils.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's our working on making sure that we're designing our strategy around proving these two points that our students are making progress and that this is in the school is in the best interest of students and the community.
Are there a bunch of other schools coming up for renewal at the same time?
Yeah. So there'll be 24 other charters up for renewal. So we're 4 of 28 that are up for renewal. So, but we're all the only CMO with multiple schools.
So there's one-offs.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
And the following year, we'll have 8 of our schools.
Basically,
the same challenge. Yes. And we are working as a coalition with all the other charters. We, you know, all of us are in this for very similar reasons. So we have met to share our strategy. You won't be surprised that KitSoCal had a strategy early on, and we'll go over that. So we shared our strategy. We have meetings frequently. What are our struggles? What is their experience with the authorizer right now? So we're very collaborative at this moment. And, you know, we're right now thinking about what our strategy is for submission. And at a later time, maybe in June, I'll be able to share more about what that looks like.
You know, and this is a funny question, but do you know if we are relatively better than the other 24, or are there problematic schools in the 24 that would be?
It's hard to tell because some of the pieces are academics, but then the internal workings, like the oversight, governance, we don't know that status of the other CMOs around those things. So, but overall, KIPP SoCal, with the portfolio that we're going in with now, I would say is mid to high pack with some of our performance, but Philosophers is of concern. And, you know, depending on the board, it's kind of a wild card, like how they talk to us, treat us, and the questions they ask about us will give us is an indication of what they're thinking. So this is our strategy. We have 3 areas. We call it the Road to Renewal, R2R meetings, around academics, oversight, and advocacy. So we have teams that meet monthly with the schools, and these are big teams. To make sure that we're meeting our milestones, we set goals, targets, making sure that we're doing everything that we can. You can see kind of all the indicators. And then our school leadership teams also meet with the academics team in addition to this to really make sure our academics is on track or figure out where we need to pivot. The highlights are Jumpstart. So typically we would have started renewal process now for a July submission, but we're like, no, no, no. We're going to do 13 months in advance. So we started this work a long time ago, more than
September.
And yeah. So we started much earlier at Jumpstart. So we feel like we're ahead of the game. We have now renewal teams. So Lindsay's team used to just really drive the work with the school leader involvement, but now we really bring everyone together. So we're talking about 15 people, all department leads, all the senior leadership team really engaged and involved. And then this, you'll love, strong community support. So our advocacy team is like really making sure that the community is going to have our backs when it comes to renewal. We're doing a lot of community engagement, which is part of our mission anyway, right? Together with students and families, and asking for letters of support, making sure that community members show up for us in addition to our team members and our families. And Joanna's like nodding yes. And Lindsay.
All the people,
you know, so that we're starting to make those asks. Will you support us when we go up for renewal? And our community partners are saying, yes, we will. So these are really great highlights.
Does this include elected members from those communities?
Yeah, so we have highly engaged with all the elect from the local to the state to even we're trying to get, you know, as many federally elected, our Congress people and our senators, two senators. Now, will they have signed letters of support? No, but they will show up to our events and we can, you know, demonstrate and highlight their support of us in other ways.
They have presented certificates. So for example, Assembly Member Gibson visited the philosophers in the fall and presented Libby with the certificate for the great work she did.
He loves Kip. We just met with him. He said, I love Kip. Yeah. The second we got in there, we're like, great. Keep saying that.
On record.
So yes, so the electeds, community partners, all the stakeholders, as many stakeholders as we can. So the challenges, again, lack of clarity from our authorizer. And, you know, how will they define this quote unquote academic progress? What's sufficient to be determined? And then the just LASD board support. I mean, it is our position that we are deep in recovery after the pandemic. And it should be no question that schools, as long as you're in good standing, you know, we've got our fiscal house in order, our governance, our management is tight. Like, let us get the school out of recovery, right? And so, you know, we are working and flexing. You'll see that we have four board members to represent each of our schools. We're working every channel we can to get meetings, to have them come to our schools. Tanya Franklin-Ortiz, highly engaged. She's been to our school. She meets with us frequently. McKenna, we're still trying to get him to Kip Scholar Academy. Tiffany, who's the principal there, work for him. But there's just like, I don't need to come. Rocio, who's the newest member, she took Monica Garcia's seat. We have scheduled a meeting with her in person. We've been asking for a while. That'll happen in April. Okay, that's something. April 10th. Joe and I are getting ready. And Jackie Goldberg, who represends Coldestone and Southgate. We have requested meetings, asked her to visit our schools probably 100 times at this point, and has been unresponsive to our requests.
And it will stay that way.
Yeah. And so, you know, we'll have to address that in the public meeting. You know, I believe that board members should be visiting schools that they serve and should vote because they visited, not because of a recommendation, you know, when they've never seen our schools. So this is the spring sprint that we're calling a stakeholder support. And then our team's focused on the academics. And then in June, well, you know, I'll have more updates for you all. We'll have academic results preliminary. By then, we'll have a good status on where we are. Ideally, we'll have the criteria and then we'll go from there. So that's renewal.
Okay.
Is that exciting or what?
Yes, very exciting.
Thank you. Hopefully it won't be exciting.
Just a celebration.
Agreed.
Good, right? It's good celebration.
All right. Moving on to the next item, which is compliance updates and voting items, which I'll turn over to Lindsay.
Hi, everyone. So I'm here to talk about our local control and accountability plan. And basically, this is a state-required plan that every LEA should be doing that outlines how we're spending our public funding. So state funding, federal funding. It's tied to 8 state priorities. And in this plan, we outline specific actions and services we're doing at each school. Okay, so just
Okay.
Thank you.
So for this year in particular, each of these plans are 3-year plans. We're in year 2. And so it's basically like an update of the things that we're doing. And it's updates on actions and services, but also expenditures. The approval process starts now with the public hearing. So this is what we're going to do today. I'm not asking the board to vote on anything yet. This is just stakeholder engagement. And this is culminating after a series of stakeholder engagement events at each site. So each school had their own LCAP meeting where they heard feedback from families. After this meeting, after we do the public hearing, then my team will work on incorporating feedback, update the plans, and then we will be presenting those plans to the board in June. Are there any questions about what I've shared so far on the LCAPs? No? Okay, then I think we can move into public hearing if there's anyone online.
So for, we don't have anybody here for public hearing. If there's anyone at our school sites that would like to give comments specifically on our LCAPs, this is the time to do that. You can use the raise hand feature, and then I can give you access to speak. So for our school sites, if there's anybody there to give a comment, please raise your hand. I do not see any hands. And again, we don't have anyone here for comment on our LCAPs.
Part of the LCAP template includes what feedback did you get and how are you responding? And so we did get feedback at school meetings, and I'll share that in June.
That's a good vote.
Is that it? Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a, before we go on to the Finance Committee reports, let's take a quick 5-minute break.
All right, we'll be back in 5 minutes.
And it's 2:24 right now.
Perfect.
Thank you. Okay.
All right, we're back.
We're back. Okay, it is 2:40 right now.
Great.
And we're moving on to the finance committee, turning this over to Kyle.
All right. Thank you. We just have a couple of finance items, two voting items. Just the first is acknowledgement of receipt and the opportunity to discuss the second interim financial reports for all of our schools. As a reminder, these reports provide an update to the state and to our authorizers and other members of the public about where we stand with our year-to-date results through January relative to our budget. And then they also provide us projection for our end-of-year results relative to the budget. And those are all provided to you through the board packet. We're happy to take any questions. Otherwise, if there aren't any, would like a motion to, acknowledge receipt and opportunity to discuss.
Okay, so the motion is before you. The motion is to acknowledge the receipt of the fiscal year 2022-2023 second interim reports for the mentioned schools, as well as the opportunity to discuss the reports and financial results with KIPP SoCal management. Do we have a motion?
A motion to approve.
Okay, EJ moves first. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Carlos second. Belen?
Yes. Just want to say for the record that Naeem departed the meeting at 2:22 p.m. Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's what we need.
Motion passes. Okay.
Second is I want to take a few minutes to discuss our banking relationships in light of the recent banking crisis with Silicon Valley Bank and others, a couple others. I guess first off, for the full board, just that we have taken steps. I had sent a little bit of communication to the finance committee and then spoke individually seeking some advice from a couple board members. But we have ensured that, so I guess let me back up. Our primary banking relationship is with First Republic Bank. So that's where the vast majority of our deposits are held. And following the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, or actually as it was collapsing that Friday, I made sure to take a lot of steps to get as many of our accounts as I could under the FDIC insurance limits. And then the preceding Monday took a few more steps to change the way our sweep accounts worked so that we, by Monday, were in a position where all of our deposits were either within FDIC insurance limits or were in money market accounts held off the bank's balance sheet and in our names. So I think from a just like, is our money safe? At this time, our money is safe, even though it's with First Republic, which continues to be under some, I think, the pressures. But given that, I did want to discuss with the board and try to get approval for us to open accounts at a new bank and possibly move our banking relationship to another bank. I have not yet had time, though, to fully vet our options and make a recommendation of which bank I think we should switch to. And I really am trying to, once I got ensured that our money was safe, it's such a major thing to switch banks. And, for us, the banking relationship is more than just a place to put our money, but we rely on them for credit and for, a lot of different service offerings. And so I want to make sure that we make a good holistic decision. All that to say, I would like to, if I could, get approval to open a new set of accounts if we decide that that's in our best interest. with, you know, a relatively large institution. So with, you know, I put in the motion a top 10 size bank. At this moment, we have active conversations with PNC Bank, which I think is ranked number 6 in terms of size in the U.S. And PNC has been a good partner to us the last couple of years. They gave us a $50 million line of credit for our real estate activity. We have our corporate credit cards already through them. It's working well. And we have about half of our money that's in investments invested through their security or their brokerage team. So we've kind of dabbled with them thus far, but I haven't, you know, I was holding off moving our entire relationship, but this has made me reconsider whether that might be prudent. So, and these, I would want to say read these off, but you know, as we evaluate this, I mean, this is some of the list of criteria that we would be using to try to decide where to bank.
Can I ask Kyle, what activities currently do we have with First Republic? It's operating accounts?
Yes, we have over 30 operating accounts for between KIPP and all the Clare entities. You know, so through the operating accounts, you know, as you've met, all the typical ACH wires, they provide some kind of boutique services, like they run a courier service or to pick up deposits at our school sites. So they have some nice little services like that that are helpful for us operationally. We do have a $10 million working capital line of credit with them. That we've never really used, but it's available to us. And then we work with their outside of the bank, but the First Republic Securities, we have some money invested with their brokerage arm.
Is it Eagle or Pershing?
Don't know. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So, first of all, kudos to Kyle because he was on this. You know, some of us got emails like right away. It certainly gave me comfort to know that you were totally on it, looking to see what our sweep accounts were. So it was great. I would probably suggest, you know, it's not one of the top 10 banks, but I'd suggest we look at City National. You know, they're owned by Royal Bank of Canada, super strong, very enmeshed in LA. Mm. And I think we want a bank that's going to support what we do in more ways than one.
Yeah.
And I think that's
a good suggestion.
Pardon me?
Good suggestion.
Yeah. Happy to get you a good relationship there. Kelly Kofi, who's the current CEO. She is the CEO. She's the first CEO that's not a member of the Goldsmith family, was on the board of KIPP New York. So I think there's a lot of symbiosis that would be good.
Okay.
And that's my suggestion.
Thank you, Julie.
We're in the startup world. There's been a lot of chatter about this stuff, obviously, and where most of the people in the from our investor and in our network have been getting guidance. Chase, I mean, again, top 4,
yeah,
if we're going to go to that, of those, that one seems to balance big, but also service. And a lot of people are pretty happy with that as well. And I can do an intro for you. We're looking at moving our relationship there. And we're opening accounts and everything right now as well.
Okay.
I don't know if it's unwieldy or unfeasible, but I know that First Republic and many of these other smaller independent banks will arrange your accounts so that you have a series of accounts, none of which exceed $250,000.
Yeah.
So that would eliminate the risk. Is that possible?
We did. They do have a service like that. And we looked at it several years ago when we decided to open a sweep account instead.
Right.
And I think part of it was that those accounts won't really offer us much of any yield. You know, and now that interest rates have gone up to a point where the yield is meaningful, we get that through the sweep account that's invested in treasuries.
Okay.
And I think we talked, I don't remember if
it was you and I.
Or it was you and I talked about it. Okay. don't remember if there were any other
term. No, but they are they do pay like 3.5-4% yield. I mean, they've gone up significantly since 3-4 years ago. So they are paying, but you still run the risk because they syndicate it. And if any of those smaller banks fail, you still have to deal with insurance, getting the stuff out. So it's not risk free, but it would be more protective, but still kind of a hassle.
Yeah. And I guess the thing our firm is trying to figure out, because obviously we have a lot of accounts for a lot of different people and move money around all the time, is the safety of the securities account, which are insured by SIPC, if I got that right. But even if you look back to those of us who are old, the savings and loan failure, the Washington Mutual failure, it wasn't a problem. Everyone did get all of their money that was in the brokerage accounts. It just took a little time. There's been sort of two thought patterns on this. One is if it's a sweep account, you still have to go through the bank to get your money. So it's probably very safe, but could be a stressful week or two.
Yeah. And so
but it's the same thing with having your money at a bunch of small banks that, you know, are all trying to get highest yield because that's what they're looking for. And then you have to wonder about it. So, you know, nothing's a perfect story right now.
Yeah. And that was one of the steps that we took was move about half the balance that was in the sweep account just completely out of the bank and into be invested with the brokerage arm, so that if the bank collapsed and it took us some time to get access to that money, we had other money that I knew we could, you know, we could set up very quickly an operating account with Chase or anywhere else, wire that money over, and we'd be good to go, you know, the next day.
Go ahead.
The other thing, I'm hearing from a lot of other companies that they're setting up 3 or 4 accounts just so that you have a primary, you have the second. Exactly. Cause like, exactly. It's not so easy to just like when this happened, like Chase moved incredibly quickly, but I mean, it took a couple of days to set up the account. They would only set one up, you know, to put money into it first, to set up a second account for payments and stuff, you know, but they were so slammed. So you want to have those relationships in place and just keep a little bit of money in a couple of accounts spread around so that if you do need to transfer or do something, that you're set up ahead of time.
Yeah,
totally.
And another question was, to what extent, if at all, are we required to keep money at First Republic under any loan arrangements that we have with them?
Well, only so far as the only loan arrangement we have is the $10 million working capital line of credit, and that does require it. But I would make it a requirement of any banking relationship that they would at least give us, you know, that a replacement line of credit.
Oh, okay.
And I suspect another bank would give us a much larger line of credit.
Okay.
So I think we'd be okay.
Good.
Yeah, we don't have
it'd be hard right now for First Republic to really require you to keep balances in their current state. We've talked a lot about that internally because they similar to Silicon Valley Bank, had, even if they weren't legal requirements, they had oral requirements that you kept balances there in order to get your loans. But it would be unconscionable today to tell people they had to do that, given the situation. So, I mean, you never know, but they haven't called anything yet.
Any other questions?
No. Before we move to that, do we need to update the motion? I don't know if you want to account for the recommendation that Julie made. Or is it covered in this?
I believe City National would be in the top 10.
I don't think so.
Oh, no?
RBC?
Is
that U.S.?
It depends how they rank banks.
Well, then we should, I guess, change.
Because in the rankings, they only show the U.S. funds, and it was like 30.
I see.
Yeah. Okay. Can we change it now?
Yeah.
We can just...
add to probably for the and City National and City National and then so Luisa, if we can add that to when you
state it.
All right. So the motion, the motion is authorize management to open accounts at one of the top
10 US
banks
and or
City National.
City National and that was it?
And approve the basically.
And approve the CEO, CFO, chief of staff, chief of staff as signatories on such accounts.
Can I ask one other quick thing? Is the by value of deposits, is that necessarily
standard? That is how they're ranked. If you go on FDIC.com, unfortunately we've done this a lot lately. They are ranked by the total deposits, which is really it's silly. Because the deposits could all be long bonds and be worth very little.
Right.
Yeah, supposedly 10% of banks have worse balance sheets than Silicon Valley.
Exactly.
So I think you raised a good question. The reason I put that was because I knew I was coming to the board without a recommendation of a specific bank. And so I was trying to put some parameters around this that would provide enough comfort to do it. And I mean, if you had asked me a month ago whether First Republic was a safe bank, I would have said it's one of the safest. Like, I couldn't imagine being in a better bank.
FDIC would have agreed.
I don't know what metric, you know, use necessarily, but that's why I had the thing.
Okay.
But you ask a fair question. I don't think it's a perfect underwriting criteria, but I was trying to put parameters around the approval.
Any other questions?
No. Can I move?
Yes.
Okay. I move to authorize management to open accounts at one of the top 10 U.S. banks by value of deposits or City National, and approve the CEO, CFO, and chief of staff as signatories on such accounts.
By Carlos, is there a second?
This is Randy second.
Randy second. Helen?
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Bill?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
Yes. Not everyone.
Motion passes. Okay.
And one more voting item.
One more voting item.
Computers.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Kyle?
Okay. So this is an acquisition of real property in Compton that I'm going to present. For some of you, this may look familiar because this is a step-up plan. Actually, we're bringing it to the board. So I'll probably go a little faster than I normally would because the board has actually provided approval about a year and a few months ago for this. But that was a different escrow, so we need to bring it back. So we've evaluated in terms of like actually open escrow for four properties now in Compton. And we've had trouble getting cooperation from the city on each of the sites, even though they've each been allowed for school use by right. And so this is one of the four. And you can see there, we were previously in escrow back in late 21 and then opted out of escrow about a year ago because we couldn't get the entitlements that we needed from the city. And at that time, the seller was unwilling to give us a longer contingency period. And at that time, you know, everything except the entitlements indicated that this is a property we should move forward on. You can actually go to the next. All right, so it's a really nice property in terms of the school use. It's a little bit over an acre, which anytime we can get more than an acre just makes the development of the site a little simpler, creates opportunity not to have to do underground parking. It is zoned limited commercial, which allows school use by right, but it does require this design review and architectural board review, or ARB review, which we'll talk a little bit about later on. The next slide shows you its proximity to the current lower school. It's about 3 miles, which is a little farther than we would ideally want to be. But there's not that much. The traffic between the two sites is not that congested typically. So it's a closer 3 miles, so to speak, than some of our other parts of LA, where 3 miles would just be totally untenable. So we think it's workable. The next couple pictures, just some photos of the site. It's all vacant at this point. I think in that first photo, there was a utility pole. That one's actually been removed, so it's not there any longer, right? But it's a nice piece of land to be starting with. These are just some of the high level deal points. The purchase price is 3.5 million, which is the same purchase price that we were in escrow last time. It took us probably 3 months of rebuffing the seller to get it back at 3.5 million. He was trying to get like 4 million from us. And we just kept holding him off and holding him off until finally he came back to the table. We had two contingency periods, one for our normal diligence and the other for the governmental approvals. We released $7,500 of our deposit when we approved the due diligence contingency. And now our governmental contingency expires next week. But this is the thing we'll get into. Unfortunately, we're not at a spot where I guess I've already jumped a slide. Sorry. We don't yet have the entitlements from the city. We haven't received that architectural review board approval. So we're not going to be in a position where I feel comfortable releasing our contingencies next week. So we're going to be asking the seller for an extension. I think ultimately they'll give it to us, but that remains to be seen. And I'll talk in a few more slides about exactly what remains to get those entitlements. In terms of the due diligence, we've done all our typical due diligence using our partners that we've worked with in recent transactions. Franco Architects been helping us with coming up with some conceptual site plans. Music Peeler has been advising us on the transaction from a legal perspective. And then HMC did the environmental assessments. We'll talk a little bit about the results of those. The next two slides show some, this is a rendering. It just really can end up being a fantastic project if we can pursue it. You see there, it's a 3-story building. Give us about 30,000 square feet, which is pretty typical. But some of the nice features is externally, we can get over 40 parking spots on grade without going underground. You see there basically a full-size basketball court, and then that elevated deck, which could allow space for PE or some other sort of recreational activity. And then we've optimized the site, or the architects have optimized the site for queuing. So it's, I think the next slide, you can see that, but you can see how many cars we could stack on the property during arrival and dismissal. And that's part of what we're trying to show the city, that we could minimize our impact on traffic by getting I think it's like 40 cars, if not more, off the street during arrival and dismissal. The Alta survey, there's just a few little minor issues that shouldn't pose a problem to us in the development. There is an easement with Southern California Edison right at the edge of the property. But given that there's no overhead power lines there, it's not an easement that's being used, and we think we could get that vacated pretty easily. And then there's two minor encroachments, one from a power pole arm and another from a neighbor's fence that neither should pose any problem for our purposes. And in terms of the geotech, it is in a liquefaction zone, which is not uncommon. We've developed schools in similar geotechnical specs before. It just means there's a little extra cost because we have to over-excavate the site down to 5 feet and then put this reinforced mat slab on it. So again, it's just adds cost, but does not pose any real hazard or challenge for the development. In terms of the environmental findings, it was formerly used as an automobile sales and service site. Associated with that, there were a couple underground storage tanks historically on the site. We do have closure letters for those. But the testing we did show that there three of the 12 borings that we did showed slightly elevated levels of benzene, which is a common element that can come from a leak of like gasoline or these types of underground storage tanks. So that is something we'll need to remediate. We actually had a similar situation on the Compton Lower School property, and that was remediated quite easily. So basically, the remediation is a combination of the over-excavation that we'll do, the removing of the soil, the grading up of the soil naturally releases a lot of those vapors. After we do that, we'll test the site again and see if it's still above the elevated levels. And then we would put down a vapor barrier prior to laying the foundation. If needed, we could also do a vapor extraction system, but that's kind of the most extreme measure that would need to be taken. And then, of course, we would do, when we do this with all our projects, we do indoor air quality testing upon completion of the project.
Kyle, do you know what the cost was on that other site to do the remediation work roughly? Or would we be baking that into the budget here?
It would be in the budget. I don't remember offhand. Maybe at most $250,000, maybe.
Yeah.
Carlos, do you got to run?
I do, but we have a voting matter, so I'm just going to
wait. Yeah, I'm just wondering how fast I should.
No, I don't want to.
These are just the comps. This is on the high end of the comps we have here. The $59 one, that was actually our property that we were in escrow on near the airport, which we weren't able to purchase because of its proximity to the airport and the state's concern about that for our use. And then the next slide shows our estimated budget for the project, which is almost $21 million, a little bit lower than the current projects we're doing for KIPP Ignite and Comienza as well. Part of that because there won't be an underground garage on this one, and those have that. And then the next slide just shows the potential strategy for paying for this. To keep the debt somewhat affordable, we would estimate to use about $15 million in debt. The rest would come from our existing cash. That's still, including the other projects we have ongoing, would put us comfortably above 150 days cash. I actually think it's well above that, but I was just trying to be conservative here. And the assumptions I'm using, 6% interest, you see a year's worth of capitalized interest. And who knows where rates are going, but I think it's not unreasonable to think that we could finance the project at this point at that price. And then I've listed here some of the potential sources of finance. So the last point is just this issue of the governmental approvals. Actually, why don't you jump to the next slide? It just kind of shows where we're. There you go. So this shows you the timeline of the packages we've submitted to the planning department. Jumping down towards the bottom, about a week and a half ago, we received comments back from the planning department. And there were basically two sets of comments. One was design related. Those really aren't going to be a big deal. It's things like the fencing height, the color of the glazing, some landscaping. But then we got a set of public work comments, and it was very clear that those comments were driven maybe half by this actual site and half by the experience the city has had with our other site and the traffic related to that. And so they're projecting those concerns upon this project. And we're not surprised, because that's what's prevented us from developing to three other sites we've had in escrow. And so some of the things they are asking us to address is the size of the driveway approaches, our pickup and drop off times, and then they want us to redo certain pieces of the traffic analysis. So that's all in the works right now. But part of why I'm not comfortable removing the contingencies without getting this clear with them, because it's really hard to figure out how much of this is, again, political, or I don't want to say political, but driven by the other site, and how much of this is driven actually by like what it will happen at this site. And I think it's both. So we need to continue to work through that. So in terms of what we're asking for approval today, just because of the timing of this and trying to avoid calling a special board meeting, would like to get approval that would allow us to remove contingencies once we have received, contingent upon receiving the entitlements from the city of Compton. So what we would be doing at this point in terms of putting money at risk, I do think we'll have to put a little more money, let a little more money go hard in order to get another 15 to 30 days from the seller. I don't think that'll be a lot of money, maybe $10,000, or that's what we'll negotiate, something there or less. There's no way they'll give it to us for free. So I think we'll have to extend a little bit of money, but again, wouldn't put a material amount of money at risk until we get these entitlements. Happy to take any other questions you may have.
No questions. Norma?
I just have a question. If you can go back to the slide where there's a homeowner right next to the property. Mm-hmm. And has there been engagement with the homeowner to make sure, because right now there's nothing on there, but once construction starts, right, and all the dust is up, will they create any issues for, the...
We have not, to my knowledge, have not engaged them yet. Joanne, maybe, I don't know if you know, but typically we haven't, to your knowledge, we haven't.
We have not engaged them. I think I actually delayed delivering an email to you to ask when we could, go more public with this, because I want to make sure we let all of the people that we've been kind of keeping warm on this know, and then we can do a door knocking.
So normally if we were to purchase it, then at that point we'd meet with them, we'd give them the general contractors, the superintendent would give him his card and his speed dial, cell phone number. So we would definitely try to build a positive relationship at that point.
We did a lot of door-to-door canvassing with flyers around where we thought the school was going to be. And then when that fell through, we will restart that then. But we did, I think, a really good job getting out proactively at the other site. Sadly, it fell through. So I think we just need to reactivate that.
And is that a single, is it a home or is that a business?
No, I believe it's a single family home. It kind of that whole street back from there is single family residences.
I'll ask Mr. Ali too, because he's
on. But the other side of the property is a major thoroughfare, Compton Boulevard.
And the city government is aware of our intentions, City Compton?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've met with the mayor. I mean, Joanna could speak more to this than I could, but we've had countless meetings. Yeah.
Okay. And I think largely they have their support.
The councilwoman whose district is in, her grandson actually goes to Kip Compton. So
that's nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've
great. Yeah. Thank you.
And just one more question. Going back to that same drawing. That was the other one where the actual layout. Well, is that the one that showed the parking?
Oh, here?
There, yeah. Is there a reason why we couldn't build a structure for parking right there? I mean, that would go multi-level, because then you will never run out of parking, and then that alleviates the community, you know, traffic. I mean, you're going to have space.
Yeah. Basically trying to control the costs.
But parking structures are the cheapest, you know, in building structures. I mean, you know, in comparison. I mean, just for issues with the community, right? Could we take that into consideration? Because it's only 40 spots, right?
That's enough for parking. I think the hard part is that a parking structure doesn't solve for the arrival and dismissal queuing when the cars line up to pick their kids. So that's why we have this like windy system, so we can have as many cars inside the property while kids are getting in and then exiting.
It's like Disneyland.
It's like Disneyland with the rides. Right, exactly. And it's, you know, it starts out longer, 20 minutes of dismissal, but then it's a nice science, and then we get down to 8 minutes. Kip Valley Preps, whose parking driveway is like half the size of here, they're able to get through dismissal in 8 minutes. So it's a matter of efficiencies, all those sorts of things. But it's like there's two specific points in time. At 8 o'clock in the morning, and then at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? All right, so the motion is, do I have a motion to authorize the real estate team to negotiate an amendment to the PSA to extend the governmental approval contingency period with the seller upon receipt of the ARB approval entitlement from the City of Compton Planning Department? Claire Holdings would be authorized to remove contingencies and close the acquisition of 900 East Compton Boulevard. Do I have a motion?
Ask a question first. Do we need to put a dollar limit on it? Do we want to just leave it open ended?
Did we put a max amount?
I don't know. I mean, if we need to negotiate an amendment, it sounds like it's going to come with a cost.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if our motion should reflect that there may be a monetary transaction involved. Mm-hmm. And if so, if it should reflect, you know, say a maximum. I don't know if that's going to tie your hands of something that you're not going to be able to do, and I don't want to do that.
I think there's a pro and con to it. It will certainly tie our hands, which would give us some leverage with the seller. But also, if they bought, our hands would be tied.
So. Well, I mean, is there an amount that we wouldn't feel comfortable releasing, period? Right, because it sounds like it's, I mean, if I have this right, it's going to be a sum that's going to be applied against the final purchase price. But, you know, we take the risk that we don't close.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, it's hard for me to say precisely. I guess right now, I probably wouldn't want to put more than 10 or 20,000. I mean, 20 would be like the upper limit. But I'm saying if it's like we totally walk away from this deal or not, I'd probably go there. But let's say on Monday we receive communication from the city that tells us like everything's resolved except this one issue, and I feel like, okay, I know we can resolve that issue, and the seller was really holding our hands to the fire, I might want to go higher than that 20, just because, you know, by that point I had a new data point, which gave me a lot of confidence that this is going to close. So I want to keep it alive. So I don't, I'm evading your question.
I'm only one person, so I'd be curious how other people thought about it.
I mean, do we want to align it with our like purchasing limit? I mean, because we can purchase things for under 200,000. We would have 250. We would never go that high, but you know, that's where we have board approval, you know,
the board is required to approve anything, any purchase over $250,000. I know that's how it wouldn't go that way, but it is a cap, right?
And I mean, for the record, I would never put, like,
yeah, I didn't know you wouldn't do that.
I don't want to lose a dollar on this or anyone else, but I also don't want to start from scratch.
And you don't want to lose the property. No, I understand both sides.
There is some risk we will take, I think. I mean, you can't pursue it without risk.
To your point, though, I mean, if we put a number into the record, then potentially the seller could see it, right?
Yeah, because it's public. It's a public. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe it's better not to. Yeah.
And in building in the flexibility for Kyle, we're going to put in a number higher than he actually needs.
Right. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think we.
Which could give leverage to the buyer, the seller.
But the opposite could be true, right? If we put a limit, then they know they can't.
But we're gonna have to put it high. That's the problem, because we don't want to tie his hands. So we're gonna have to go over what he actually needs, which is the problem. We're gonna put a higher number than we're actually targeting. Yeah. That's my concern.
All right. Well, there's a motion. Either it stands or it fails, or you can ask for an amendment.
Okay.
So I call the motion. Is there a first? I'll make a motion. Randy.
I'll second.
Norma, second. Belen.
Carlos.
Yes.
Randy.
Yes.
Phil.
Yes.
EJ.
Yes.
Julie.
Yes.
Norma.
Yes.
Luis.
Yes.
That's it.
Is there one more?
Really quick.
Yeah,
I'll go
to the voting item. And
yeah, let's that. Yeah.
Okay.
So one quick voting item. Heather's not here, so I'll step in. And this is really just for approval of our board meetings for the calendar for the year 2023-2024. As you can see up on the screen, the dates are September 21st, 2023. December the 14th of this year, February the 1st of next year, March the 28th of next year, and June 13th of next year. Again, this is approved by this board to have those be our regularly scheduled board of director meetings. Do we have a motion? I move. Carlos moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Norma, second. Belen?
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
All right.
Great. We'll go back to just the updates right here for you. Kyle.
Yay.
Oh, sorry. I will anticipate it. Ready? Everybody ready? Get ready to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, really, Eric should be doing this. He's doing all the work on it. But this is Tip Scholar, and as you can see, we're making good progress there. A little bit of delays from the rain. Fortunately, you know, it wasn't a muddy site by the time it started raining, so it's not been too impactful. It definitely will hinder us a little bit. Right now, the biggest potential risk to the schedule is the elevator already. Eric's working on that. And then this is Kip Ignite. This one is, from what Eric reports, a muddy mess. So the rain is definitely impacting our schedule here. This is some of the shoring underway, but that's what they're working on, and they're doing some excavation as well right now.
This is a very long road to get to this point for Ignite breaking ground. So when Kyle sent the message to us, I think all of us nearly fell over in excitement to see that giant drill. Bob the Builder. I think this is the last slide for me.
Yeah.
So just upcoming engagement opportunities. So you all received the invite for the welcome event for Shavar, who's the new KIPP Foundation CEO. KIPPSTAR, it's our 10th annual KIPPSTAR. We're so excited. We hope to see everyone there. The KIPPSTAR selection committee just met, what was it, yesterday? Yesterday. So can't wait to share with everyone the winners. And then we have a ribbon cutting for philosophers, finally getting back to our ribbon cuttings, to celebrate. So the philosophers ribbon cutting would be great to have board member attendance, given, you know, KP is up for renewal. We have June 1st MoCA, Museum of Kip Art. So fun. You can see, you know, our art decorate our hallways and your homes. And then we're going to schedule some spring school visits for board members just to kind of get back in our school. We're scheduling this now. It's been a long time. We want you just to feel the energy of our kids. These aren't going to be long, extensive, but hey, come say hi. We want our board members to be visible. We want our school leaders to be able to show off some of the great things. And this will be a good preview for next year when we'll have more formal, longer visits like we used to do before the pandemic. So we'll send this in out to you again, just as a reminder. Plus, we'll add those after-school program or expanded learning program events and opportunities for you to chaperone, you know, trips to the world and other educational opportunities. Whatever, yeah.
Just gonna answer, where is MoCA going to be?
MoCA is going to be at the California Science Center this year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's exciting. Yes. Nice. So you should be getting that invite. I mean, we have, you know, lots of parties around here. So Kip Soda,
Sorry. We also just wanted to invite you guys. We'll put it on your calendars to, we don't have a full title yet, but it's like going to be a day of justice or something relevant to that. So Luis and I are working to put together a summit that's going to be held at LMU that will have educators and people in the criminal justice system there to kind of explore the connections that exist between education and the criminal justice system and talk about, you know, some of the inequities that exist, some of the challenges that exist, and build more like shared understanding and networks between those two groups of people. So Luis has done a ton of work to convene a really good working committee, and that will be on June 24th, which is a Saturday from 8 to 3.
And I want to thank Joanna and Angela for this. This was, as y'all know, I've been with the Public Defender's Office for quite some time now. And the last few years, I've been over our Juvenile Services Division. My frustration is, as attorneys, can't speak for Phil or Carlos, but sometimes we view things in a silo in what our area of practice is. And the population that I deal with are youth. And seeing that us as attorneys don't talk to educators don't talk to us about very common problems that we encounter in both silos. So my thought was, let's bring all of us together and look at issues that affect, that intersect between criminal justice, juvenile justice, and education, and give an opportunity to thought leaders to talk about issues. And this is not about solving problems. This is really about breaking down silos and talking to each other, sharing ideas, and expanding networks for both groups. We're calling it a summit. We don't know what we're going to call it yet, but it's going to be day long. The way we're planning on it is having 2 to 3 panels in the morning, having a fireside chat during lunch with somebody come in and a moderating kind of discussion. And then in the afternoon, having 2 breakout sessions. The audience are us, everybody at KIPP, educators, juvenile justice advocates, and families. I think this is, for me at least, it's necessary to move beyond what feels comfortable and to move beyond our individual silos. So hopefully this will be the first of annual summits dealing with these issues. And I think this is a great opportunity for KIPP to take the lead in areas that we haven't seen. So more to come.
Always ahead of the game.
Norma.
Yeah, I have a follow-up on that. Can we send names of people we like?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll love that. Because I'd love to invite our judge mutual friend, yes, back in. So it would be great. But the second thing is, there is now a training called ALICE training for school shootings. So this is, yes, separate. So is there any work with KIPP right now on doing that? And it is free to schools.
So yeah, we actually do have our staff trained and our operations teams in ALICE training, where our approach though is, and there's research behind training students around this, we don't directly train students. Like, we have safety protocols, we practice things, but we don't practice active shooter trainings. Drill. We don't do drills in our schools for that, but we are trained across the region in those practices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just recently went on that training. It was amazing, but so many people got killed in my team. And so it was just devastating.
Yeah, we don't do that.
And they use rubber bullets, you know, in the process of the training. No. But we had everybody from superintendents, you know, to principals and teachers. And it was just shocking, you know, to me. But the people that got saved, right, there were real key decisions to make at that moment, right?
Yeah. So we're trained. We just don't do that with kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other questions? Right. Just a thought. I mean, it feels like this is not on that topic. There's a lot of events.
Yep.
And I know you weren't on track, but somehow those invites come through kind of weird sometimes. It might be nice to have a
Google calendar,
shared board calendar.
Okay. Yeah.
With all the events, board meetings, other events, so you could just plug in or something.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, we can put that together.
Perfect. Great. Okay.
We have a few quick items in closed session.
Yeah. So no other questions? All right. It's 3:32. Let's go into closed session.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on.
Wait, why
would
I do that?
Oh, boy. So
sorry, not sure if y'all can hear for our audience. For our interpreters, you're welcome to hop off as we, after closed session, we don't have any decisions that will be made. And same for anyone who is viewing. You're welcome to stay on or you can hop off as well. Thank you so much.
We don't have any action that will happen in closed session. And then for any of our school sites that are listening, you can take the closing. Thank you so much.
Okay, great.
Here we go. And next slide. There you go.
Okay. So while coming out of closed session, there was no action taken. It's right now 3:47. Our next in-person meeting will be on June 15th. I will not be here.
Great.
Okay.
We'll have Heather. Heather.
June 15th.
June 15th.
Heather will be in charge. And unless there are any other issues, let's adjourn.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thanks. Happy Thursday. Happy Thursday. Thursday.